Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is John Frazier. John is a personal trainer for over the last 32 years. He specializes in post-rehabilitation and started in personal training because one of the many injuries came from an interesting place as a trainer, and he has physical limitations himself. When he was 27 years old, he was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis. He can relate firsthand to clients that have physical problems and teaches them how to work around those problems. Over the years, he's worked closely with physical therapists to continue client therapy until they're 100% improved. Proper form is essential to avoid injuries, and together with strength, endurance, and flexibility, he helps people avoid future injuries. He also is a massage therapist, which can help clients recover faster and get quicker results. He's also the author of the book he published last year, Through the Pain. It is the silent suffering and triumph of a personal trainer, and charts his journey of over 30 years being a personal trainer with ankylosing spondylitis. Hi, John. Welcome to SpondyCast.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So you have an exciting story that I think most of our listeners will resonate with. Can you share a bit of that story and about your diagnosis and symptoms and how you're doing now?
Well, I don't know how exciting it is, but it was a journey. In retrospect, I had had AS in high school, probably. I had back issues in high school, played sports, played football, basketball, ran track, powerlift, you know. But I had issues with my back early on. And, you know, at the time in the 80s, when I went to high school, pediatrician just gave me muscle relaxants and a back brace and said, have a good time, you know, which is, you know, like I said, and everything in hindsight, you can look back and go, well, that wasn't the right move, but I'm a kid. I don't know. I'll just do what the doctor said. They didn't know. I mean, a lot of times too, when you're that age, they'll go, oh, it's growing pain. So you think, well, my pain I'm having in my spine, my hips, my SI joint, that's normal. Everyone has that because they just keep telling you it's growing pains, rub some dirt on it.
Right.
Get back in there. So I wore a back brace playing football through my whole high school career. And sometimes I wore it, at school. I mean, I shouldn't have, but it hurt quite a bit. But like I said, at the time, I didn't know any difference. So it was later in my 20s, after high school, I started my first kind of job, real job after high school to put myself through college was working at a gym as a floor trainer. 19 years old, I had a friend and I went ahead and went to this club and became a floor trainer making $4.25 an hour.
I remember those days.
Well, I mean, I thought I was doing well because minimum wage at the time was $3.35 and they're paying me $4.25. And I'm like, man, I'm rich.
Right.
So $4.25 an hour to take people through the Nautilus equipment to clean toilets. You know, I mean, you're a floor trainer, but you're not a certified trainer of any sort. But shortly in my 20s, not too long into my 20s, I was working out quite a bit, lifting heavy weight. You know, I could squat up to 400 pounds, 450 pounds, and, you know, really, you know, still kind of building and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, the workouts, my back would just go out, the SI joint, and it was almost became a weekly event where I had to go to the physical therapist to get my SI joint manipulated back into place. And over those courses of time going to the physical therapist that was a friend of mine, and he just put it back in and I'd go off and it seemed like it was going out all the time. He was poking around one day, you know, and he felt on my lower lymph nodes, my lower abdominal, and it was really, really sore to the touch and they were really swollen. And he's pressing around. I went, ow. And he's like, oh, your lymph nodes are swollen. And that was the first indication that there was some kind of inflammation, some kind of something going on.
Interesting.
So he was the first to kind of make me aware that there was some inflammatory condition I had. And it was because, I mean, they hurt. I mean, and even to this day, in a flare up, I can feel my lymph nodes and they're swollen. So it's almost like it's an autoimmune response. We know that now, but at the time, right, I have no idea. So I'm still working out, my back's still, going out. And then I hit a point when I was 26, almost 27, where it affected me to the point where I wasn't able to keep anything down. I would eat and everything would just, didn't matter. And I thought it was allergies. They did all these things, these battery of tests. I had a sigmoidoscopy. I had a barium enema, which is always fun. And because I was having a lot of intestinal issues. Well, we know now that that was related to the AS, but at the time they're checking that out. And a friend of mine was a doctor, very smart guy. And I was telling him all this and he goes, well, what? I said, my back and this. He said, why don't you walk down the hallway? And he watched my gait and saw something and sent me over to a guy that he knew. And it was the first time they drew blood and they were looking for that. You know what gene they're looking for, right?
Yep. HLA-B27 turns 50 this year.
Yeah, there you go. So they were looking for that and they found that I had the markers and they did the x-rays. And over time, it seemed like the diagnosis came in. You alluded to this earlier. It is a long and hard diagnosis sometimes. And even over the years, I've had people question that diagnosis. Like a doctor, well, I don't know. I haven't diagnosed. I'm like, well, many others have. So you can slow down, because they want to be the one to diagnose it, I guess. So when you switch doctors, they're always questioning that. But I'm like, no, this has been this is very charted. I have the x-rays. I have the, I went through a lot to get that. So at 27 years old, I finally got the diagnosis, and it's still in the 90s, so we didn't have a lot. There was no biologics. They didn't have medication for it. There was no treatment really. They didn't know it that much. And so I had it. And then that was that. I mean, there was no, okay, sure, do this and this.
Yes.
It's just like, okay, I kid you not, this is exactly what the doctor said. And he said it kind of tongue in cheek. He goes, well, just make sure that your posture's good and your shoulders up. So when you fuse standing straight up, opposed to hunched over. That was his advice. I mean, this is 90s, 97, 98. Yeah. That's what they had. So I did go to the arthritis center and they started to give me a medication. And it just made me fall asleep while I was driving and things. And after 6 months, they tried on another one. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me. I said, I think I'm a guinea pig, that they're just trying different drugs to see what happens. And so I almost wrecked my car. So I decided, I don't think I should be taking these. They didn't seem to help much. I don't know what they were. But I decided to be more holistic with the diagnosis early on. Now, you can do that early on when it's not as bad, let's just say. Come and go. I could go 6 months sometimes and not think I had anything, and then I'd have a flare up. It lasts a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever, and then back and forth and back and forth. And over time, it gets much worse. So it became, but I used massage, I used chiropractic, acupuncture, stretching, exercise, diet, all these things to try to, make it better.
So do you, you look like you're doing well and you continue to do all those things?
Well, yes and no. I have to be careful more now. I mean, a lot changed over the last 2 to 4 years for me. Whereas exercise always seemed to make a difference and was helpful. Now, if I'm not careful, exercise can make me a lot worse in some respects, if I do something that's too much. The amount, the things that I've had to give up, I play basketball every week and I haven't done that in over 5 years. I played my entire life and competitively in not professionally, but local tournaments and leagues and whatnot. So I was, that's been really hard to have to give that up, but to get to the point where it was just too hard to do. So there's a lot I've had to cut out. I used to jog and run 6 miles and can't do a lot of that. I mean,
yeah, I went through that where I was a runner and now I'm a swimmer.
And that would be great if I didn't sink to the bottom and drown. I would be a swimmer, but I can swim to not die, but not to act. It's just never been my cup of tea.
It wasn't mine either. I just started taking swimming lessons.
I've tried and I just sink. I mean, maybe it's too much muscle or just,
yeah.
I have no buoyancy. I just go straight to the bottom.
But do you find even you yourself or with clients, the journey, we'll call it, right? I'm not going to, no one can see you or me, but I will admit that we are not spring chickens. How do you yourself do it? And how do you help people adapt to stay physically active, but still manage a chronic disease progressing? Or
I can still walk and I can hike, I can walk, at some elevations. I live up kind of in the mountains, not on the foothills, but probably. So it's hilly. And so I can still exercise. I just have to be very careful on how and what and when. If I'm going to flare up, there's certain things I can't do. But what I feel like has been something that a lot of people could adapt to. I recently have a dog that I've had on maybe a year, and I had a dog prior, but I didn't always have a dog. And I found this last year having a dog, it forces me to walk her. If you're a good dog owner, you're going to get your dog out and exercised and, it's good for them. But I found the benefits, how much it's benefited me. The first thing, like this morning, she starts whimpering by the bed, get out of bed and have to go take her for about a 20 to 30 minute walk.
I can hear her. She sounds like a lamb.
No, she was just sucking some water. And now she's actually a pit mix. But she's smaller. She's older, 11, and she's rescued. But taking care of, there's twofold things. One, just because before I'd be stiff in the morning and just kind of shuffle around the house until I got going, having that dog that needs to go out and it's good for them and they have to, unless you want them going in the house, you got to get them out, has been very good for me to get going in the morning. And so when I come home from the walk, feed her, make my coffee, and I do immediately a meditation for 10 minutes and then a stretch. Nice. And they go hand in hand. You can use the Calm app. It doesn't matter. You can sit there and just breathe for 5 minutes, whatever it is. I've always been a meditator, but I established that habit of meditation and stretching first thing in the morning during the pandemic. I got into that habit of just refocusing what was important, and that was important. So I found having a dog that needs to go for a walk has been a very beneficial thing. And then I do still work out. I just not at the same levels that I used to. And I have to, in my head, accept that. And to tell someone how to accept it, everyone's different. But I have a lot of clients that are elderly. They don't maybe have AS, but they have, strokes and other conditions. And, and it's hard sometimes to accept the things that you cannot do anymore or you shouldn't be doing. But I try to focus on the things that I still can do opposed to what has been taken away. And there's this thing in the back of my head that says, you could play basketball again, just not right now, and I don't know if that's wishful thinking or if it'll ever happen, but the fact that I feel like that maybe there's a chance that there might be a time where I could do it a little bit. So I think, you have to give yourself grace and understanding. We're really hard on ourselves, and when things go differently than how they have been, we have a hard time. No one likes change, so it's hard to accept. But I do work with clients on trying to accept the things and try to stay focused on the positives and what we still can do opposed to what we can't do.
Yeah, I think that is what keeps us a lot of us going. My one thing I gave up, I decided, well, I only did it once in my life, but is skiing. I know a lot of people who ski and I always say, I can't ski because I have AS.
I never did ski. And I'm like, don't really want to.
Oh, I just wouldn't want to fall on myself and like hurt myself into a flare. But I think, I mean, even basketball, I mean, that's what, but basketball is not for, I know a lot of people love to play. I have more than one friend at my age who now is perfectly non-impacted by any kind of disease or illness. And the more people I know that rip their Achilles and playing basketball and.
Oh, the journeyman ball player more than likely tears their Achilles. Because yeah. That's all they do is they go out once a week. They don't stretch. They go out there and they just start going, and the Achilles tendon. I mean, you see it in professional sports all the time too. And these are fine-tuned athletes that are much younger. The stress on the Achilles is real. And when you're older and you're basically just work out on the weekend kind of guy, that I saw that too a lot. But I was physically active. And if I were to do it now, I mean, yeah, my Achilles tendons are affected by the AS. Yeah. I mean, because I have plantar fasciitis, which is one of the beautiful side effects of having AS, right?
Yeah. But in that vein though, do you work with your clients who do have AS to stretch, do a lot of stretching with their program?
Absolutely. I mean, not just the ones with AS, but all clients. Stretching is such a vital thing to do regardless, because age will get you, and if you're not stretching and being inflexible, it only gets worse as you get older, no matter if you have a disease or not. So
right.
I don't stress it any more for that people with AS than I do with the other clients. I stress it across the board, and everyone's different. The stretches might vary. It might depend. It's always depending upon someone's flexibility. Everyone's got a different flexibility. And then you just take it to where you can. You don't overdo. Oh, don't overstretch or force a stretch. And the most important thing about stretching is breathing. And most people try to hold their breath when they're stretching. So, but I find it's vital for everyone to stretch on a daily basis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Have you had patients, or not patients, clients, who maybe were sedentary for some time, and now as you begin a new program with them and get them moving, like where do you start, or where do you see people start when they haven't been doing something for some time?
Well, it is very individual. That's probably why it's called personal training. It's in the title. It's personal to that person. Everyone has a different starting point. Everyone has a different past, and everyone has different injuries or surgeries. And I can give examples of people. I always find that if I work with someone, let's say they're 70 years old and they haven't worked out in the last 20, 30 years, but they were an athlete in college or something, they tend to have a much better, easier response because the muscle memory is there, and they start working out and the muscle's like, oh, we remember this. And then they have a better time. Whereas if I hit someone else that has been sedentary their entire life, and at 70, their start point is going to be a much lower start point, and it's going to take a lot longer. But I do, wherever I have to do an evaluation and assessment first session with the person to see where they are. And I've done this for 33 years, so it's not that difficult for me to figure out pretty quickly where someone is. Recently, I had an older gentleman that had gotten so sedentary that he was really losing the ability to use his legs. Like he couldn't even, he was shuffling along. His mind and his body was disconnected from even being able to like pick up his leg. Like he could look at his leg and say, lift it, and he couldn't do it. I mean, and over the time, in 6 months, the guy is jumping around and walking and feeling great. And so if it's done the right way, it doesn't matter where someone is, we can slowly but surely take them along the journey and get better. And to what degree? And he's 89 years old, by the way. So I had a client this morning that he is 87 years old, and he says he's better than he's been in 15 years. So
that's amazing.
It is a huge impact. And just the attitude and the the confidence and just where they are mentally is almost as impressive as physically. I mean, the one client, I was about to say his name, but I can't do that. No. He's a different person. He was very almost despondent, sad, sullen, barely talk. Now he's got his head up and he's talking and chatting and laughing and he's feeling good. I mean, so it affects the mood of the person and their personality as much as it does their physical. So it's amazing to watch.
And do you train clients in person or online, or how do you handle that?
Mostly, you know, personal training there again is a hands-on job. Doesn't mean that I can't do online. It doesn't mean that I can't do consultations on Zoom. And I can also do some assessments on Zoom and that kind of thing. I don't know about, I've never done ongoing training on Zoom, but I have done the initial, you know, like, this is what you need to do. I can tell, you know, these are where your starting point is. So, but mainly to, because I have to manually stretch these people. I have to manually position them and help them. And some need help getting up and whatnot. So a lot of it is a in-person thing. I'm in Los Angeles, so.
Okay, I was gonna ask.
I drive everywhere, but it has to be within, you know, with that. But if someone is interested in, you know, getting going, I can easily do that online, yeah.
And do you have, are a number of your patients AS patients?
I call them clients, but.
Sorry, I keep going to patients.
It's okay because, I say clients because I'm not a doctor. People go, they get upset. So, most of my clients, because of what I have, they have something. I have a lady that has a stroke. I have a guy that, you know, had a heart condition. I have someone that has AS. I had someone that, you know, had two knee replacement. It's not always someone with AS. I do have one person that I train right now with AS, and I have trained others with AS. But everyone that I train, typically they have some issue. I don't, my specialty is to focus on that group of people that a lot of people have forgotten. It's easy to train a 25-year-old that has no health issues. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of trainers for that. There's not that many trainers for people with disabilities like I said, and that's why I focused on that in the last several years. And it's led me to a lot of more elderly. I teach a fitness class at a senior center, you know, things like that. So it's kind of gravitated towards that as well.
Yeah, that's cool. And yes, it is, right? It's so much easier for a 25-year-old.
With no health problems. I mean, I've trained athletes. I trained college athletes back in the day for football. I've trained celebrities a bit. But I think there's a group of people that most trainers shy away from, and that's people with disabilities and issues, because it's harder. It's harder. It just simply is.
Yeah.
But it's not impossible, and that's why I'm, you know, doing what I'm doing.
No, I love it. I love the commitment. And the so I know you talk, I think, and maybe you include this a bit in the book, at one point you talked about helping people continue post physical therapy.
Well, over the years, and most people know what I'm talking about when I say this, is that our healthcare system has changed quite drastically. And what used to happen is that you got physical therapy until you got better after that knee surgery. And that's not the case anymore. You know, the insurance company, you got 2 weeks and good luck with that. And if you're not healed in 2 weeks, then, well, sorry, that's all we're covering. And then people typically are then left alone or by themselves to fend for themselves. They can't afford to continue to go to the physical therapist because it's very, 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 very expensive if insurance isn't covering. So some people would hire me to continue that post-rehabilitation exercises to get them to full 100%. So I've worked with a lot of physical therapists, and they do recommend or send people my way to want to continue to keep going and get better. And generally, sometimes after they get better from whatever that injury was, they just want to keep going because they want to get better physically overall, just better health.
100%. I think of it like you want to feel this no matter what age you are, you want to feel that good when you're 86.
Yeah, it's not about the quantity of our life. It's about the quality of our life, I think.
Agreed. I think that's something that AS has taught many of us.
If you live to 86, but you're in writhing pain for the last 50 years, that's not great.
It's not great at all.
You know, but if you're feeling pretty good and die at 80, you know, that's not too bad.
No, I still want to get past 80 though. So tell us a little bit, you have a refresh on the book coming. Can you tell us a bit about that and just kind of give us an idea of what to expect and where we can get it?
Yeah. Essentially, during the pandemic, obviously, we had some time on our hands, and I had just eclipsed 30 years as a personal trainer, and I thought I might have something to say about training and having AS and that combination. And so I started writing a book called Through the Pain, The Silent Suffering and Triumph of a Personal Trainer. Now, the subline is, because the initial title was Silent Suffering, but it sounded too depressing. And the silent suffering part is, as you know, you hurt and you don't, unless you just tell everybody you come across that day that you're in writhing pain, you keep quiet about it. Because a lot of times, you know, I'm going around training clients, they don't want to hear that I'm dying and hurting and stuff. So you keep it to yourself. And when I first was diagnosed, I kind of, like I said, I had little understanding of what it was and all these things. And I thought, oh, I got this. I have a diagnosis. I have to go tell my friends and family and sit them down and tell them the bad news. Like I had something that was going to kill me, which, you know, it might eventually, but but at the time I was like, okay, guys, I have AS. They're like, what's that? And I go, I don't know. And then it's like, what do you do? And then people then, I don't know, it got to the point where I was like, well, and they, and that's the thing. I think for me, the reason I wrote the book was that I had been told, and still to this day, told that you don't look like you have a disease. And it's like, just because I don't sit there and walk and act and moan and groan, I train myself not to groan when I stand up.
You know? That's interesting.
Like you don't have to go as you get up. You can still hurt and not verbalize that hurt. And like I said, I realized, and I've been around a lot of people with different conditions and things, and I found that the people that just complain and bitch and moan about how much pain they're in, people feel bad initially, but then they're like, you know what? I don't want to hear it because there's nothing no one can do.
It's a fine line. But it is. It's hard when you're not feeling good. And then you get into the, I mean, I know that people get into a cycle of like the silence where they don't talk about it. And but you're right. I think there's a lot of, trying to remember who it was that we had on a few months ago. Cause she also talked about the flip side of not ever complaining in your circle or acknowledge, like bringing it up. And I think it was the workplace lady. Her name escapes me right now, but she talked about sometimes we do have to remind people that we have it in our lives because they forget that we don't. It's so invisible for many of us.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, no one wants to walk like they can't walk. I mean, it's kind of like you try to walk where you're not like limping or you're trying to do something that, you know, I don't ever want to try to draw attention to the fact that I have it unless I state it and tell you I do. But like I said, I mean, it goes on deaf ears because people look at me and I'm still relatively in decent shape. You know, I'm not in the shape I used to be in, but I'm in some sort of shape. So people still consider me fairly fit and, well, you don't look like you have a disease. And so that's where the silent suffering came in, and the triumph is part of that catchphrase is that I'm still here and I'm still standing and I'm still doing this. And I'm going to try to have a positive attitude and keep surviving and keep thriving with or without a disease, you know, because I can't change the fact that I have it, but I can change my attitude. I can change what I focus on, you know, to get by, opposed to focus on what's been taken away. I focus on what I still can do, you know, and I know the options that can happen. And when I see someone in a wheelchair, I'm like, I'm still walking around, you know? So it sometimes there on the bad days, that might be the, you know, the one thing that kind of gets me through that day is that it could always be worse. I drive down the streets of LA and homeless everywhere. And I'm like, well, I'm hurting today, but I'm not homeless and hurting, you know? So
right.
I try to look at it in perspective.
Yeah.
So it's. I digress.
No. I told you the weeds are my favorite place to hang out. So
through the pain, the silent suffering and triumph of a personal trainer started during the pandemic. And being dyslexic was a very difficult task to write a book. But like anything in my life, I just said, well, I'm going to Google it and figure that out. I really did. I Googled, how do you write a book? And you kind of have an idea and then you just kind of start doing it. And then it took a long time because I didn't do it the right way. You're supposed to write every day and I didn't. But I learned a lot by doing it. And the first came out, I kind of feel like I maybe rushed it. I wanted to get it done and get it published. And some of the errors you were asking, the second round is coming because I'm going back and there was some issues with it and formatting and stuff. So now it's getting fixed and ready to go on Amazon. And if all you have to do is on Amazon, just put in, I do have the link here in the chat, and maybe you could post that, but if not, you just go to Amazon, put in Through the Pain, John K. Frazier, and it pulls up. And if you have Kindle, then it's free. Or you have Kindle Unlimited, it's part of the package, it's free. If not, there it's in paperback as well.
And it's Audible too, correct?
I do not have an Audible now.
Okay.
That's a whole nother thing and another expense to do. Because like I said, I self-publish, so it's to do that, you have to, you know, that's when you get like really expensive, when you have to go get an audiobook, because that has to be done professionally. And the studio time and all that. So if I can sell enough books, maybe I can go back and then do the audio book.
We're going to put it on our pick list for this month.
And everyone go out and buy it, and then I can do
an audio book. You can do an audio book. And you can uplift those of us that deal with this. No, this has been great. Any closing advice or tips for anyone that wants to improve in terms of mobility and long-term.
You just never give up. I mean, I know in my own, and I don't know where it comes from. It's something that I've always been, is when I set my mind to something, I just don't give up. And you can have bad days and you can even throw yourself a pity party, but don't do it more than a couple times a year, because pity parties too often won't be beneficial. But if there's a bad day and you want to have a little pity party for yourself, you can. Know that it's okay to feel bad about how you feel. I mean, the worst for me is the fatigue. You know, I know I can push through the pain. It's not fun. It's not great. I can kind of is. Stiff or as bad as I am, I can kind of seem to get through that. It's the fatigue that really knocks me down. And that's when I get a little bit like, man, because I can't do anything. I mean, I have to get up, train a client, go back to bed, get up, train a client, go back to bed. That's exhausting. And so, and recognizing that it sucks, that's fine. It sucks. But staying in that place of it sucks isn't benefiting anyone. You can recognize it. It sucks. Now, what am I going to do? What am I going to do about it? Now, what am I going to do? I'm going to go walk my dog. I'm going to do some stretches. I'm going to try to bend over if I can. But I do want to say one more thing about the book. And that's because I'm very proud of it. I have to say, because, you know, it's a really, really undertaking. And I think it's a beneficial thing for anyone that has a condition. I try to, it charts my journey as a trainer from the, and I chart from the earliest that I can remember the injuries that I've faced over time. And I chart all the injuries up leading up to the diagnosis, and then, you know, how I've handled it, how I've used it within my training business, personal training business. My company, by the way, if anyone's interested, is Fraser Fitness Consulting. You can find my website online. And if you want to reach out, you can contact me through the website. But Fraser Fitness Consulting, all the information's on there that if you want to reach out and have questions for me and or want a consultation or anything that like that over the Skype, I can do that as well. But I hope people enjoy the book. I did try to make it humorous because I didn't want it to be, like I said, a pity party thing. But it's real. I tell the real story of what I've faced with having it, and the good, the bad, and everything in between. And hopefully it'll be inspiring for other people to read.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it. I, because it's not easy to always just be real and tell the story, is it?
No, I'm a very honest person, and then it's a very personal book. And I didn't even think about that until I got it published, and then friends and family reading. I was like, oh crap, my friends and family reading.
I know.
But you know, that's the nature of putting it out there. And I just think that, you know, you go after people that will support you. I don't, you know, you don't want people to pity you, but you want people to be supportive, and find a community within wherever you are. There's tons of AS groups out there. I just did they have a huge bike ride for the, you know, Arthritis Center of Texas. Arthritis Foundation of America. They have a whole, you know, thing. And there's a lot of support groups. I also really recommend having a therapist. I think someone to talk to about your condition is very important. That's non-judgmental. Not a friend that I can sit there. If you're paying someone, you can sit there and say, oh, this hurts and that hurts and damn it and shoot, darn it. Yeah, damn it. You know, because
no, that's
you know,
a good point. I mean, it's the holistic approach to people, right? That's what's...
Well, because you don't want your spouse or your friends to be like, oh, John's calling, he's just gonna complain all day, you know.
Yeah,
so exactly. I got the therapist so I can, you know, complain about AS, talk about my pain as much as I want, with, you know, no judgment, all that kind of thing. I find that to be helpful because I think depression is very, very rampant with people that have a condition like AS, not just AS, but other conditions, MS, you name it, you know, because it is depressing, you know?
Yes. We all deal with it differently, but it is at times. I mean, I'm with you. I've been hit the low points that you somehow drag yourself out. And I think you nailed it with like, just don't ever give up.
Well, I mean, and I hate to quote a movie here, but it's one of my favorite all-time movies. And it's one of the best quotes. And it's very, very simple. And it's from Shawshank Redemption. And it's get busy living or get busy dying.
Okay. We're going to land on that. I like Shawshank. Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been fantastic. And it was
nice
to
have you. I appreciate it. And go out there and get my book.
Exactly. Exactly. We will put it in the social media announcement. And hopefully if people are, have some questions, they can reach out. But thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, and I'd love to come back and talk some more sometime.
Awesome. SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.